So this is the Brothers West number 22. This happens to be late May 2015, just to put a date on it. And so with us today is the Venerable Mike Hammett out of Chicago area. And then we've got Tom Smith all the way from Ireland. You're at home right now, right?
I am indeed.
So you're in Dublin, correct?
I'm in Dublin. I'm sitting down beside my lovely fridge.
Yeah, I like that artwork you put on the side of it.
Well, that was my daughter's. You know, sure, she's two sure and a half. She's actually three, but she did that when she was 2.5. She's a child prodigy. She's going to be building routers in no time, I'm telling you.
I heard it was a steep mountain to climb.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Good learning time. Certain interfaces is a steep hill to climb.
God, you had to work it in. Oh, God bless you, Tom. God bless you. And finally, Tom gets to marry now that they've legalized same-sex marriage over in Ireland. Congratulations, Tom.
Thanks very much. Well, all I can say is, you know, some men like other men and some women like other women. People got to deal with it. Peace out, yo.
Dropping the mic. All right, good deal. Yeah. And then I'm Greg Soule, down here in the best nation on earth, Texas. And we're going to talk about, Mike was kind enough to make us, he's kind of the mom of the group, so he was kind enough to make us a little list of all the stuff we can talk about. So there's been a whole lot of moms that have happened. We've actually haven't spoken in a forum like this in a while. Everybody came to the U.S. mom, though. Well, I say everybody. Thomas didn't get to make it. He got shafted this year. And everybody else made it, though, I think, that was planning on coming. Except for
the Aussie lads and the New Zealand lads.
Yeah, yeah. But they don't
Sorry,
get
Andrew
much.
And Andrew.
Yeah, the Andrews. But they actually had a Melbourne mom not too long ago, and I think they were having one in New Zealand as well. Has that actually happened yet, or?
I think that was the first.
All right. Did Thrift do a topic or anything? I don't know if he did.
I didn't see him on the agenda, and so I was going to give him slack for that. You know, Thrift is always dumping massive amounts of knowledge into our chat.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of nice because he keeps it to us. And then, you know, we look smarter and don't have to have him advertising how smart he really is to everybody else.
Yeah, that kid's brilliant, man. That's crazy. And he's got the great hair. But, so let's see. Let's talk about the U.S. mom. Like, because I was there, so I remember it probably better than the other ones that I didn't go to. So the first thing you always talk about is hardware, right? So some of the new hardware was the HAP, the full HAP, not the HAP Lite, HAP. I'm sure they have some crazy number designation for it, but I don't remember what it is.
It, that kind of new was coming. It's like they announced the HAP Lite like a while ago. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, there's going to be a HAP if there's a HAP Lite. And sure enough, here it is.
Or HAP Heavy.
HAP Heavy. HAP Fat. But they also, on the HAPs, they announced the, that's the dual band, right? So they, on one of those versions, they have the 5 gigahertz and the 2 gigahertz finally all in one box.
Yeah, that got a round of applause in Europe.
Yeah, yeah. It's huge. Who is it? Ubiquiti's been doing it for years now with their Unify AP Pros. And virtually every other manufacturer that I know of does it. So it only
Plug
makes
number
sense.
One. couldn't resist, sorry. But yeah, no, like it was long overdue, definitely. But actually, I sorry for interrupting, as I always do, but I still do it. And same, don't be talking when I'm interrupting. But I was asking about the HAP and the HAP, and I was like, what's the point? And then Yanis goes, look, it's different processors and stuff like that, and basically they want to, that as different models come out, different processors and different chips come out, that it'll be like the 3 Series BMW. So he says the 3 Series BMW changes every year, but people still just go for the 3 Series BMW. So stops the whole confusion between, oh, I want a 751. Oh, you don't have 751s. Oh, we have 951. Oh, well, now there's a 951 HNDZ. So now it'll be just happen HAP, which hopefully it'll make our lives a bit easier because, Jesus, naming some of those products or even remembering them was painful, you know?
Yeah. So have you guys actually played with any of the HAP lights yet?
I have one up in my bedroom, the one I got free in the mom.
Gotcha.
And one of you guys have my HAP light that I got in the US mom.
I think that's JJ's got it. Sorry, bro.
Fuck.
I know.
I'm going back. That's it. Gypsy.
He looks so sweet and innocent, but he's not.
Yeah, no. Now he has two. He's like, oh, I got two, and they're running as a cluster. And I'm like, one of them's mine. Sorry, JJ. Hi, Kim.
I bet that JJ took yours, and then he made that. Remember, like back a few weeks ago, NASA discovered warp drive. He took those two HAP lights and then he built something that does warp.
There you go. Well, I know I've personally used a bunch of them so far, only I haven't used the wireless in any of them. I just turn it off and then it's a really nice $22 router, which, who's that? I think we ended up saying that to Tully and he was like, man, I knew we should have put three ports on the thing. Cause four ports is like perfect. I missed kind of the fifth port, but such is life. I know they also, kind of in that same vein, they just, was it the 750 R2 or whatever, V2 or whatever it is, came out. And that's got like an 850 megahertz proc now on it. So it's a lot more kick.
And is it, it's still in MIPS based box. It's not like the 850. It's a MIPS based one, is it?
I don't know. You have to let Mike look it up really quick. But then, let's see, so they announced the HAP, the regular old HAP, the dual chain, the HAP AC light, the HAP AC, yeah, that's those. What else did they talk about?
The 2011 on steroids, with the ARM processor.
That's right, the 3011, right?
Yeah.
Is it a dual? It's like dual processors now, right? Or is it just a single?
It's dual core, I think 1.2 gigahertz ARM.
Yeah, and then it's all gig ports for now, right? Instead of
Legends, yeah.
Yeah, instead of half, like five were gig and five were 100, now they're all gig.
The RB 750 R2 they call the Hex Light, lowercase H, capital E X, Light. It's 850 megahertz MIPS. 5-port 100 meg.
There you go.
100 meg.
They say that its price is lower than the cost of the license by itself.
Yeah, I think they're like 30. I think I saw ISP Supplies had them for $39, somewhere around there. Right at $40.
Miller's here.
Yeah, there's Miller. So it's still pretty decent.
My favorite of all those was probably that the HAP. AC, I think that would be a great like home box if it had external antennas. It's got dual bands, it's got 2-chain, 2-4, 3-chain, 5-gig, it's got gigabit, it's got SFP for those guys that are doing fiber to the home, it's got PoE in, PoE out. Seems to be like a nice does everything box.
Does it have a USB port on it?
The picture has one, specs don't. So it depends on how accurate that is.
That's interesting. So it has virtually everything. What's up, Justin?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
You guys hear about all the routers with the net USB daemon open on it that you can hack? Routers that basically if a home router has a USB port, there's a good chance it's got this library that's open to the world.
Some ports open to the world if it's got USB somehow.
It's 20.055.
Yeah.
Not that you would advocate any such activity.
No, I'm just saying you gotta watch out for that.
Does it require something like UPnP as well, or is it just that?
Nah, it's to make the USB port available over the internet, basically. Like if you're sharing stuff off of it.
You said 20.055?
20.055.
So it might behoove some people to go ahead and block those ports.
Yeah.
20.055.
It's net USB. That's what it's called.
Might have to write a little script for people that are like scanning IPs on that port.
Good. throw them into the black hole.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting one. So, Miller joining us from Virginia, correct?
Yes.
From the house, is that the missus in the back?
Oh, yeah.
Watch yourself, she's internet famous now. Well, how's life treating you?
Pretty good.
Excellent, man. So we were just talking about some of the hardware we saw at the U.S. MOM, and I guess the year, really all of them combined, because it's been so long since we've talked, really anything we've seen so far. So we kind of talked about the HAPS, the 750 version 2, the RB3011, and then Mike was just expounding upon the HAP AC, finally got a dual band router, although it's no external antennas. Is what Mike was complaining about. Of course, he's got to find something wrong with it.
Yeah. I haven't asked for it. I ask for the same things all the time. I just don't get it.
What are they going to do? Like, five or six antennas off of it or something?
Well, stuff like TP-Link, I've seen they have, like the 2.4 is built in and, like, the 5 gig is on an external antenna. But then some of those, like, high-end gaming routers, which are just a way to take more money out of
they
people.
Look like the spinning antennas coming out of it.
Yeah, like a porcupine. I mean, you know, I could see him rigging up some sort of dual band antenna that just has like a because those are fairly cheap, and then just get like a diplexer that only allows 2.4 to go one way and 5 gig to go the other way, so you're not blowing out the other radio. And you can just share antennas. Use three antennas.
Mike, on the note of you not getting what you want from MikroTik, you're not the only person who doesn't get what they want from MikroTik.
You wanted that big kiss from Giannis and you just wasn't having it?
Next year. Maybe next year.
There's always,
hi, Giannis.
Yeah, there's always next year. Let's see what else. Can you think of anything else? There was a new CRS that was announced, right? The 112HG4SIN.
Yeah, another alphabet soup. It looks nice. It's got 8 gig copper, 4 SFPs. It has a separate. It's got an RJ45 console port on it. Looks like.
Have any of you guys actually used a CRS yet?
Yeah.
What'd you think about? Is it better configuration than the 250 or 260 GS switches they have?
Well, it's actually router OS, so yes. It's basically like a the same interface that you have when you have a switch chip in your MikroTik.
2011, like.
Yeah, or 1100, so you get two switch chips in that. But it's like that, so it's the same kind of configuration. Then the options are just... there's a lot of options, and I don't think they're all completely well documented. So,
gotcha. I was fighting with a 250 GS again, and I don't know why I bother using these things. It's because they're so cheap and they've got an SFP port, but their configuration is so crazy on those things.
We use them as media converters and switches, and don't do any VLANs or anything on them because whenever you do that, they just tend to leak and
they're
blow
crazy.
Up.
Like, I wish they would just do tagged and untagged like everybody else does. Then the way they have it, I'm sure it makes sense to somebody, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I'm an old dog and I don't want to learn new tricks, and it drives me crazy.
I think anyone we've discussed the switch interface with who has tried to use it have the same opinion. Which is that it doesn't make sense. But I believe they are making an attempt to use, because if you look at the where they have done stuff well, it's where you have the bridge and, you're doing tags, when you're doing, let's say, VLANs with bridges and physical ports and all that, that works really well. Yeah. And you can structure it, you can set it up really nice. You can have your untagged ports. You can have your per VLAN spanning tree. You can have that all really well set up. So apparently what they're going to do now is just have a bridge, that you create a bridge, and then there'll be a tick box, use hardware features or something like that. So that will be moderately exciting.
Yeah.
If it came out.
All right. I've been avoiding the CRS because I assumed the switch interface was similar to that of the the 250 and the 260GS, but if it's more like router OS, that actually makes sense to me, and I can use that, so I'll probably get it.
They've been improving their switch chip interface within our within router OS and its capabilities as time has gone on. You know, back in the day, it was just you turned it on and you didn't know anything. It was just you just saw a switch and it was blindly doing stuff. But you can get more control over that now.
And they have enabled like the counters, so you can actually see individual switch ports throughput, which is, I suppose, good. But I think in terms of using it as a switch, in terms of using all the switch features like VLANs, port isolation, that type of stuff, I'm, you know, not convinced yet.
Well, the only isolation it has that I know of is the Horizon that you can set on it, like other ports.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And then setting the Horizon again, that's very much a manual sort of thing as opposed to Spanning Tree, which is pseudo automatic, I guess, for the most part.
Or private VLAN edge.
Yeah,
PVLAN edge, yeah.
So let's see. Since we're talking about software, I was going to say part of Mike's little software list is he has Fast Track on there, which was a new feature that was announced at the US MOM, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's basically, from what I can tell, it's a fast path for the contract features, like different parts of NAT, things like that, so that then stay within fast path functionality. But, you know, as you look at like the performance specs on the website, if you can use fast path for something, it's just amazing how much more throughput you can achieve if you're using FastPath. So it'd be nice to see that come through to more options.
What allows you to actually use firewall rules and eventually, you know, FastPath that.
Yeah, that was something I was kind of turned off by the FastPath in the beginning, because anytime you have connection tracking on, it kills FastPath. So if you're trying to do any firewalling, you're trying to do any NATing.
Well, they got the half-path thing going now.
Half-path?
Yeah. So FastPath allows you to set a rule in your firewall that kind of jumps you into a FastPath, so you can still FastPath a chunk of your traffic. Right now, it's only in the release candidate software, and I know Giannis was saying that he popped it on maybe a 751 or something like that at his house, and he was able to get like 800 megs throughput using it or something like that.
Nice.
They also have the half path fast path where it'll stay fast path until a certain point and then jump out and do its thing and then jump back in or something like that.
Yeah, or unidirectional, right? Like if it can only do it a single direction, it'll do it. Something to that effect.
They just keep finding more ways of adding fast path to more features, more traffic directions, and that's, you know, more fast path the better.
Yeah, I think it might have been Thrift saying that he was talking to Giannis, maybe, and he was saying something about how they're going to be adding some more functionality to the fast track system, something like that. So, something to look out for. All right, how about Roman? I think it was announced at the EU MOM, but I didn't really get it until they were talking about it this go around.
The Roman was just announced at the EU MOM. It wasn't demonstrated in the same way it was at the US MOM, actually. So
yeah, so it was actually kind of interesting to think about. So it's some kind of proprietary protocol, I guess they wrote, that is used just for administration, and it kind of crawls your network and makes all these, but they said it's not a layer 2 connection, but it's not a routed connection, because they said you don't have to worry about spanning tree loops or anything like that.
They're small,
so I'm not exactly sure how it works, but you're
PFM.
Right, I don't know. But you can connect to, say, a border device, and then from there, you can MAC Telnet to any device anywhere on your network all the way through. So it's kind of interesting, and I wonder if they're going to try and it would be cool because it kind of auto maps. You can see like this trace route of all of the devices through using it. So it'd be cool if you had some kind of Dude version 3 or whatever that would pick this up and auto map and do all that stuff and then allow you to administer via this method.
Like its current form, it doesn't really interest me that much, but if they make something else out of it, like you know, this is just, you know, phase one, then I can see it being interesting.
I think they need to document the security controls around it too, though, a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they said it's off by default and that you can put a password in there. I'm not sure what the hashing algorithm is, though, or anything.
I mean, Justin Wilson said, can we turn it on by default? And I was about to kill him when he was asking that. Sorry, Justin. But,
They said it was a challenge response hash. So they hash the password and do a challenge against the other router. And then if it's, you know, appropriate, it comes back and says yes. So.
But it's like, how do those communications, like what sort of encryption algorithm are used when you're actually managing the routers?
Yeah. Hopefully they didn't design anything and make it their own.
We'll see.
Mm. All right, so the third and last thing for software was version 7. So of course, we have to talk about version 7 at some point, the mythical unicorn that is version 7. But they said that it's going to be coming out this year, correct? Or later towards the end of this year?
I don't know if I heard that. I wasn't there. I just put that on the list because Thrift said that they did confirm an X64 version. So that we will be able to use more than, you know, 4 gigs of RAM.
Why?
For virtualization with MakerTik if you want to.
Yeah. Well, I think they said that they were waiting for 64-bit because the older kernel that they're using, like in version 6 right now, doesn't really support it. Now that they're going to version 7, it's going to support it natively, so they're just going to jump. Wasn't that, or am I just making all this up?
So they're about too many kernel patches that need to be applied for 64-bit on x86, and so they have to do it anyways with version 7, so they're going to just... You know, jump on the bandwagon, do that on x86 now.
Might as well.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead. I would think for, you know, larger route tables, but then I remember Yana saying how, you know, you'd be able to fit like 16 tables and only like 500 megs of RAM in V7. So maybe they're feeling less confident they can meet that goal. So they figured, let's just throw some RAM at it.
Yeah. So something else I was reading, that I thought was kind of interesting was somebody, so it was probably Miller, he's probably about to say this exact thing, but somebody in a list somewhere had posted up something about how, I think they were like a European IX or something like that, and they were evaluating the MikroTiks, and they were saying that BGP being single-threaded is an issue right now with the CCRs, but also something about how each route is individually computated or readjusted or something like that is extra CPU intensive. Elaborate, Miller. You're shaking your head.
So the churn of your routing table has to be recalculated every time there's a BGP update. So with lots of tables and lots of churn, you get a constant CPU usage recalculating everything and coming up with the best AS paths. But I was going to say... it's not just the memory in x86. The 64-bit CPU has additional chipset functions that you can use, which make it more efficient and faster to do certain operations. So you get a performance. You get the that might be available regardless, but yeah.
No, but like there's more pipelines for
yeah,
more pipelines.
Yeah.
Excellent. So. Version 7 hits, we should be able to take our x86s and fly them to the moon at that point, I guess.
Turn them up to 11.
Mike, your camera is making me seasick.
It'll be good when it comes out, as you know. As long as they, you know.
Well, I mean, they're supposed to be completely rerouting the route engine, right?
Yeah, I suspect that they're going to use something like OpenBSD or OpenBGPD as the basis, because the numbers they were quoting per route table was very similar to what OpenBGPD had actually achieved with theirs. Like, as in, they have around 35 megs for full route table. If it was, that'd be, I suppose, a very positive thing. It's also good for MikroTik in terms that they don't have any issues with licensing. You can take it, close source it, job done. They'd have a fair bit.
Why are you so in love with OpenBGPD as opposed to Bird?
If they did Bird, they would have BGP and OSPF.
Right, and Bird and is still actively developed, right?
Six. Yeah.
Well, OpenBGPD has a sister payment called OpenOSPFD.
Yeah, but I thought that sounds like
twice the work.
I thought they quit. I thought they quit developing. I thought OpenBGPD quit development a while back.
I like their approach. They're super anal, and when they release like something to you, it's less likely to bite you in the ass. They do slow releases. They're behind the curve slightly on multi-processing and stuff like that, but their focus is single-mindedly on security and stability, and that's something I really admire. I think that's awesome. So yeah, I'm feckin' in love. I'm an OpenBSD fan. Hello, Theo.
In the turn up of my IX, with Tom's recommendation to go with OpenBSD and OpenBGPD, and come to find out when I was researching it, I'm trying to figure out how do I get it downloaded to install and what the newest version was, because it seemed like the version was really, really old. Version 4.6 was, I don't know how many years ago it was put out. But then come to find out that after 4.6, they just rolled it in to OpenBSD, so it just came as part of the disk. And you pop it in, you get the latest OpenBGP, OpenOSPF, all their other ancillary systems that they made. It was just latest distro was the latest of that, so it's not as old as the website may indicate, but it's
yeah, I popped it into a VM and spun it up, and I think it was probably start to finish, it was maybe an hour to get a peer up and get it configured. So it wasn't that bad. So if even I can spin it up in an hour and do it, it's really not so bad at all. Even though I hate to admit it.
But, I had originally thought that the IXP manager was going to have open BGPD templates for the provisioning of the members, but looks as though that's only available for Bird and I think Quagga or something like that. Why they would support Quagga still, I have no idea.
Mm.
Nobody uses it.
Well, but it's like Cisco like, so it's probably.
So I'm going to end up developing, like now we're just doing everything manually, but I'm going to make some templates and pushing it back up, see if they want it.
Cool. No, I actually thought they supported that, because when I was talking to the guys, they have at least one OpenBGPD box on INX, but I think it may be just acting as a root collector from what I hear now. But the guys, yeah, they're pretty cool, like Barry and Nick, they know their stuff. So they've done an awful lot of development on IXP Manager, yeah. Do you use that yourself, Justin?
We use Bird.
No, but do you use IXP Manager as well, or do you just...
We haven't got to that point yet. We haven't. That's on the list of things to do, along with DCIM, I think is a rack management system that we're looking at. So we OS ticket. And then Observium we use. So now we haven't got that.
Just, I'm going to actually chat to my my login details for our like as a customer on IXP in INX. I'll chat to you later. You can check it out, but it is pretty neat the way they've set up in INX.
It looks like it's got a lot of configuration options.
It does have a lot of configuration. I've been configuring it for like 2 months, and I'm still not done.
Yeah.
But that's just, there's just so much stuff to, like, you know, as I'm going through like their list of things, it's like, I never thought of providing that. I never thought of doing that. I never thought I would have to do, but like all these things that they say, you know, I have me go through and configuring, it's all like all the things that I should be doing these things. So if I didn't have to configure it, I wouldn't know that I was supposed to do it without having it somewhere.
That was the one thing I found nice about joining our INX was that, like, the guys just talking about, like cleanliness, you know, on the ports, like blocking certain types of ether types and stuff like that on the IXP, and just general hygiene on the actual IXP was pretty cool. So I did learn quite a bit on that. But Justin Miller and Mike, sorry, I was just wondering if you could enlighten me on Bird versus OpenBGPD. What do you like most about it? What do you like least about it? In your respective IXPs?
Well, when I was getting everything first set up, as I'm trying to figure out how to install it, which apparently was already installed, and how to configure it, which most of the documentation out there was for people using it as a regular router and not specifically for route server. I'm plowing through things. And I had lots of choice words for it, but it was mainly because just the BSD environment was different from what I'm used to in the Linux environment. And, you know, I just figured it was all the same, and it wasn't. But, you know, now that I've... That was the biggest hurdle, just knowing that BSD is different than Linux. Once I overcame that, it's pretty easy to get the route server itself up and running. It's been pretty easy to, you know, add more peers. When I was trying to find things, I kept seeing how all these people were running it and now they're not, which made me wonder why. And then I saw a presentation from AMZIX. AMZIX and the D6 are the two largest IXs in the world. D6 largest by traffic volume, AMZIX by member count. D6 says a few weeks ago topped 4 terabits per second going through their exchange. AMZIX is a little behind at like 3.7 terabits, but I think D6 has maybe 600 members. I think AMZIX has like 800 members. And like, to put this in perspective, how like different this is to those of us in the US, it's like Amsterdam and Germany are right next to each other. Like there's so many networks pushing so much traffic through in such a small area. It's just mind-boggling. But going back to the point of AMZIX switched from OpenBGPD to Bird due to convergence issues, due to having... simply having 800, not all 800 are on the route servers, but I think there's 500-600 networks on the route servers. So maintaining separate tables for 500 networks for all of their peerings was simply more than it's able to handle. And it sounds like the OpenBSD guys have been working on punching that out. But I looked at it and I was like, I'm not going to beat that business. There's no way I'm ever going to get to be the size where that is a concern.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it was based on the fact that they're using the IRR toolkit to import
filtering.
And so they had 300,000 lines in their root filters. So, and apparently the way it worked was you had to kind of process each prefix coming in through those. It was just the way they did it was exact same. They copied the design for packet filter firewall. And actually the author of it, Henning Brouwer, admits that he possibly made a mistake on that. Like, I mean, it's great. It's a very stable product. But he was saying for the bigger IXs, it's certainly a problem that he'd like to look at some stage. Or he kind of just said that in hindsight, he wouldn't have done it that way if he realized how much hassle he'd create for larger IXs, I suppose. I don't know if he has time to fix it. And I don't think you and I are going to step up and fix it. Maybe we will, Mike, but maybe Greg could kind of chip in with his expert Cisco and Edge router abilities.
I'll point my finger all day and say, do this, do that.
But yeah, so for IXs that are our size, you know, I'm never going to see that limitation. In some talks with people about, you know, how to mitigate the problems, right now everything runs within one process, so you just break off your v6 route server is just on a separate process or separate
like
VM.
Bird.
Yeah, but like
bird six.
but you know, so that you know, it's just one step to kind of break that down a little bit. But I mean, I'm just never going to get that big. I mean, you know, I can't see my biggest exchange getting more than 50, 100 customers. And that's very, very optimistic, because then right now there's only like 22 networks in the building. You know, assuming that there's more buildings get added, well, we are adding more buildings. We've had data centers asking about us. But adding more buildings and, you know, growth of the internet in the area because we're there, it's never going to get 500, 600, 800 networks. It's just not a possibility.
So how much traffic are you seeing on your exchange now?
Not very much. We're passing more traffic through to Chicago still than we are locally. But that will change once the Akamai boxes arrive.
Akamai, and your DIA will get filled too as that box gets populated on demand.
Yeah, that's something we knew about, and you know, actually, I've got a source that gets like some pretty cheap price and quality bandwidth there to back that up if I need to. But I mean, we're in talks now with pretty much every other major CDN has come to us in the past month saying, hey, we've heard about you. We want to be involved. Send us your ASN, send us your prefixes, and you know, we'll talk.
That's cool. And I know, like any IX, you guys operate on a lean budget, and Mike's not too good to put his hand out, so if there's any hardware vendors that want to send some equipment his way, I'm sure he'd be happy to take it. not too proud. I'm sure he'd give you plenty of shout-outs and put a giant sticker on the side of his cage.
Speaking of which, I'd
like some.
I just take cash. Just send me money. I don't want hardware. Give me money.
I think before our largest member joined, I think Google was telling us that they've got like 5.7 gigs to send our way once they bring their waves up. And that's, you know, I think that was before our big customer. And I mentioned this in the chat and before we started recording, but we recently added a customer to our IX that has, they are advertising 2.1 million IPs. They've got a /14, I think 26 or 28 /16s. They've got two double digit ASNs. a triple digit ASN. You know, these are old time operators here joining up, and
that's cool.
You know, I think with those guys joining would be just a massive, I mean, so much stuff for now.
Yeah, it sounds like that guy's compensating for something. That's a lot of IP space.
It's a research education network, top universities, things like that.
That's cool.
You know, types of people that I guess kind of made the, you know, like I think one of their ASs is under 20. So it's like they've been around building the internet since it was the internet, so I guess.
Old men, I got you. I smell what you're carrying. Yeah. They come in and they always have Werther's Originals in their pockets and they smell like Ben Gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But hey, if I need them to come on board to get Apple, Google, Facebook, Netflix, Limelight to say, hey, we're building out to you, bring them on.
So be it, man. It's good to know people.
It's kind of nice that chicken and egg thing, you know, where the content guys are going, where's the eyeballs? The eyeballs are going, where's the content? Netflix. And you're bringing together Fusion.
So those guys actually, they just turned up their BGP sessions today. So I think we've already seen, you know, local traffic double on the IX. Because like most of our members are Indiana ISPs right now. And so now they're talking to the, you know, universities with people working from home or students pulling their email or just BitTorrent, I guess. I don't know.
That's cool.
But I always wonder how many here. And then now getting those guys, now it should be easier to get the bigger ISPs to join, you know, like Bright House Networks is a cable company, currently involved with Charter and Time Warner, so we'll see what happens there. But, you know, now we got the big content guys, now we can get the big ISPs, now hopefully then we can get the big, carriers. Just kind of you got to have enough of one to get the next level. And, Justin knows what that's called, you know, just getting ones and twos until finally you make your big break, and then people just come flying in.
Gotcha. Cool, man.
I'm not rambling on too much about the IX.
Yeah, you are.
Well, still, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, no, man. You've been neck deep in it for so long now. I'm sure you're maybe seeing a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. So, that's cool, man. You're excited about it. You're passionate about it. I dig it, brother. But in the spirit of keeping it going and trying to stick to a tighter schedule than we customarily do, let's move on to your next section. You had labeled as presentations at the MUM. So Tom has done two since we last spoke. He did the EU and he did the US. And what's that, Miller? He did what? That one presentation? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I do.
He mixed it up a little bit.
Gotcha. Remix. It's like the remix. It's like
we remixed. We added in place. Some samples. Yeah, but it was. I suppose it was about 40% recycled the US one. So it's about the usual denial of service techniques with BGP and stuff like that. So mainly focus on ISPs. And mitigation techniques for ISPs or people running BGP, I suppose, really. But no, I enjoyed doing it, and I think it was reasonably well received. But there was actually another DDoS presentation in Europe, actually, which was done by a friend of mine, Matthew Cantor, and another Italian guy whose name I forget, Alfonso, I think his name, right? But they did actually a pretty good one, but that one was more focused on, enterprise networks and, you know, specific kind of denial of service, like higher up the stack rather than just flooding the physical interface with traffic. So they were kind of looking at application level. They were actually an interesting concept they were doing was using traffic generator to generate the traffic for a denial of service, which... Do not try this at
yeah,
home.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they drop on the
bad
the code for that.
So yeah.
So you were talking about denial of service. We met a new kid named Thomas from the Netherlands.
Oh, it's unbelievable. From PC Extreme and
yeah. Brilliant kid. Brilliant kid. He's really super down to earth. Really sweet kid. His girlfriend Sarah, really good kid.
Hi Sarah. Yeah. Hi Tom.
It was really cool meeting them, but he's doing some cool stuff. In front of their, I think they're hosting and some of their managed service stuff. They're doing MikroTiks just as firewalls, not necessarily routers. And they're doing what intrusion? They're doing like IPS boxes over here on the side that are pushing rules over to the MikroTik, I think.
Yeah. So basically, they had they were using a tool called PM Accounts and NetFlow from MikroTik or possibly from other Juniper routers as well. So he was using PM Account to take aggregate the flows. And then he had ExaBGP running paired with a root server. And then he was basically running in-memory databases to calculate. So he wouldn't have any latency for writing to disks when he'd actually detect a bad flow. So he was actually detecting a denial of service attack within 10 seconds and then quenching it within 10 seconds, which is pretty savage. Like, because I think most of the stuff that I was looking at and working on was kind of like your kind of 5 minute sampling, which obviously, you know, an attack could have come and gone. So he had a very different take on it, and he was using Python scripts. It was really, really impressive. He kind of spoke at the end of my presentation in the US one. And he was just talking about it, and I literally had to go, I want to talk to you after the presentation. But it was really impressive. But it's actually something worth looking at as PM account for the people at home there, because it allows you to kind of filter through and parse data, but it also allows you to create what they call traffic matrices, so you can actually identify traffic sources and destinations on your network, so you can see your top content providers, that type of stuff, or content sinks, or eyeballs, I suppose. You can see all this type of information, and obviously denial of service attack feeds from that too. Like, so yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of working with him on that project a bit more.
Yeah,
it's certainly something I'm passionate about.
Savage, yeah.
It was really awesome what he'd done, like in-memory DBs, yeah, all that type of stuff. And literally he was populating the config of the, basically the ExaBGP with the BGP speaker he was using, the software he was using, and then he was basically then talking that up to an actual root server that was distributing the black hole roots, yeah, to quench the attack. So it's pretty awesome.
And something even cooler to go along with that, he said that he's going to open source all of that stuff in the future.
Oh, nice.
So he's going to put it shit out there for everybody else to, I guess, slag off and say how much inefficiencies there are in his code, and then they'll go about using it happily. That's usually what happens.
No. The only thing I'd change in it is probably I'd use OpenBGBD instead of ExaBGB. But everything else about it, I mean, there was a serious amount of work. It was pretty cool what he'd done. And I look forward to copying it. Thank you, Tom.
No kidding. All right, so let's see. That's Tom. That's Thomas. Pat Harris from US Sugar, who couldn't make it on this call. They're actually doing a migration tonight. I was hoping to get him on one of these casts. Well, we will at some point, but we'd have to dedicate one just to Pat, man, because that brother likes to talk. But he's got plenty to say, and it's fun to listen to him. He was making jokes during his presentation, pointing people out. It was hilarious. He was killing me. He made something about how nobody could understand him because he's, you know, from Florida or something like that. I don't know. It's pretty classy. But he has a tremendous network. So he was talking about, and Tom knows this better than any of the rest of us, because he's actually been out there and helped Pat out. But I think he said his network covers like 300 square miles. And so in his presentation, he showed that, you know, the little clip of it, and it's hard to gain scale. And then he showed it against the whole state of Florida, and it almost goes like coast to coast. It's crazy how just tremendously large that network is.
But like, in fairness, I didn't help him out that much. Like, I was just reviewing his network and kind of showing where they could improve it and stuff like that. But it was, he was pretty, it was an impressive example of using MikroTik to its strengths, which is, you know, its flexibility. Like he was saying that if he used any other vendor for the wireless network, because it was like a 3-month project from start to turn, you know, turning it on, rolling it out in full production. And he says the amount of goalposts that changed as it went along was, as you can imagine, they were kind of going, we're going to do Wi-Fi network, we're not too sure. And it was literally like 200,000 hectares or acres of sugar cane. Luckily, now Florida is flat, so you know it's a very flat topology. But you know, it was certainly a challenging thing. And to say that he did that in 3 months is just American. But it was pretty impressive.
And Pat, I love talking to Pat because he's one of those guys that's just, man, he's just happy to be alive and always has a smile on his face, and he's just a hell of a good guy. So I would definitely encourage everybody to reach out to him if you haven't already. And man, he is way too helpful. To a fault, he's going to help you. He's a really good guy. It's kind of the opposite of Tom. Brilliant.
Yeah, and
it's over between me and you, Greg. You're my arch nemesis now, my kryptonite.
Is that, yeah. So I just got to grow the mustache.
The thing on Pat's network is that, you know, most of us are service providers, you know, servicing other, you know, homes and businesses and schools and whatever. This is just their internal network.
Yeah.
Right. It's just to provide their internal communications for U.S. Sugar, and it's just a massive
infrastructure. But he actually had an ISP before, a wireless ISP before he joined U.S. Sugar, and I think that was probably key to the success, because, you know, I think, you know, a lot of us would have been, if you were an IT guy, you're probably thinking, oh, Cisco or Maru or something, you know, when you kind of go for a wireless system like that, of that scale. But I think because of his exposure to wireless ISPs before, that actually gave him a massive head start. And to be honest, U.S. Sugar were lucky to have someone like him, because, you know, a standard IT professional or network engineer probably wouldn't have been able to pull it off, being honest.
No. Just the RF alone. You know, not only the engineering of everything, but just knowing how RF works and how to distribute it in that large an environment. That's trial and error. You got to work for that, because I know you guys work with RF a whole lot, and I've worked with it far less, but still a decent amount. And it is like herding cats. It's like trying to, you know, catch water in your hands. It's this live, amorphous, moving thing, and it's just so difficult. Because I'm very on and off, one and zero, so I'm a very binary person, and RF is not a binary. You know, it's more of an art than a science, and it drives me bananas. I don't see how you guys can handle it, but yeah, to just go from nine, you know, nothing to 90 like that, no mere mortal can handle it. You guys obviously would be able to step in and do it, but you're extremely weird, so it tracks.
Kevin calling the pop black there now, Greg. Weird.
No, let's see.
No, but you are lucky. Like, I mean, you deal with waveguide. I remember a guy in the exchange, Nick Hillard, was saying, oh, you guys are wireless, I'm all about the waveguide. And I was like, what the fuck's he talking about? And then it, you know, fiber optic is a waveguide. Yeah. And I was like, all right, yeah. I envy you that, but fortunately, we can't afford to roll out fiber.
Yeah, we can't all.
In rural environments, it's kind of.
But the Irish are getting an awful lot of fiber this past month. There's been two announcements of the first two subsea cables built in the past 10 years, both landing in Ireland?
I think what is we're looking at that because of the technology companies and also Irish appetite for porn is as healthy as ever. It's pretty much it is like we are fortunate that thanks for keeping me. In fact, Mike knows more about the telecoms market in Ireland. He gave me the tip off about Hurricane Electric landing in Telecity Kilcarbery. You told me about the other two cables, and you taught me about another cable the previous year. So Mike has been keeping me up to date on what's happening in Ireland.
That just means he's...
Who says the really... NSA are not watching everything?
Yeah.
Mike is the NSA.
Mike is just a really nerdy stalker. I don't know if you noticed that. Yeah.
He's got his ear to the fiber all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But respect and keep them coming.
But
don't be undercover as the NSA.
There's a Hibernia is going into the south of Ireland, the Cork. There's an AE Connect going to the north of Ireland, and then the one last year was going from Dublin over to the UK. There's another route there. So I even remember. Or what these things are, not just that I did it. I remember which ones it was and where they were going.
You're bizarre.
But we are looking, I was actually, after coming back from the US, I went to a cyberbullying summit. It was actually in Facebook headquarters. So Facebook were kind enough to kind of host it. But it was more geared towards school kids and professionals in the area. I was actually going in a selfish way because there's a lot of politics around internet censorship. I don't know if there's much in the US, but certainly in the UK, David Cameron tends to think that the girls that went to Turkey are some IS dickhead in Syria, that somehow the ISP should have been monitoring and looking for this type of behavior. And I'm like, seriously, does this guy have... He's actually running the country and he's gotten a license to run it for another 5 years, God bless us all. But anyway, but basically, what I was refreshed at this cyberbullying summit was that the people, the professionals, like the psychologists and all that, were actually talking about it and that they knew that the intermediate ISPs can't really do that much, that has to be done on the application layer on the, you know, the actual content provider, like the platform, the social networking platform. And it was really cool to see the social networking platform guys interact with that, you know. And I suppose, but like that's what I was saying to Mike there, that I think because of the likes of Facebook, YouTube, Google, Ask.fm, they're all setting up shop in Ireland, which is great, and long may it continue. You know, I think that's probably why the demands for landing cables and hope, but it's lucky because we are an island nation. So if they didn't land sea fiber, we'd be kind of screwed. So you know, well, at least you know if you landed in France or Belgium or Germany, you know you could actually kind of hit Europe. But in Ireland, we're an island. We're kind of we. So luckily, the island disadvantage has been overcome, and hopefully, touch wood, it'll continue that way, you know?
Mm, for sure. All
right. Oh, and there's one more cable coming there, too. I just remembered about this one.
You just compile a list, Mike. Send him an email.
It's called the Arctic Fiber, or Arctic Fiber Express. It's going from Japan, north side of Alaska, over Canada, and it was just going to come down to New York, but they added another leg. Adding another leg seems like a small task, but they're going to extend it also all the way over to Ireland.
Mike, that seems pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
Don't mind Greg, he's just being a little bitch tonight.
That's right, brother. You got to stay on schedule and crack the whip.
I think some of this is due to trying to bypass the intelligence agencies, US, UK. I think it's why they're choosing where they land carefully.
What's that going to help?
Nah, it's not. Absolutely not. I'm sure we'll just tap their undersea fiber
cable. That's why the Americans have submarines.
America.
America.
All right, so let's see what else we got. I did a presentation on, what was it? Using BGP QoS. To create QoS policies. So it was really just using special filters to make comments on your routes, and then a script that would go through and grab all those routes and then stick them into an address list and have them time out in a friendly manner. And actually, Miller was the I was trying to bust out that script, and it kept acting a fool. And so Miller said, "Hey, have you tried this? AKA, have you tried the right way to do it?" And so I did, and it absolutely fixed it, and then went from there.
And I was busting your chops during your presentation.
You had to, man. I photoshopped.
Have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you tried this? What about this?
And it worked. It worked brilliantly. Let's see what else. We met Alex for the second time. It's Alex from Washington, and it's the way it works. The brothers
Washington with State.
Washington State. Yeah, absolutely. We meet a guy, and then we go away, and if you come back again and you still haven't gotten tired of us yet, then we kind of let you in the group. So Alex is in the group. He's a brilliant kid. Wasn't able to make it on this call either, though. But we're right at an hour, and I think we should probably try and put a bow on top of it so we can save a little bit for next time. I think we need to actually just do this one like every 2 weeks, schedule it like on Wednesday at 8 o'clock or something like that. Make it a semi-regular thing.
What about Friday?
What about Friday?
Aren't you out drinking on Friday?
Sometimes, but I could drink with you.
You could stay in and drink.
I could stay in and drink with my homies.
Homies.
So, Justin, are you going to talk about Bird? Because I saw Mike just took your slot there completely.
I can if we got time. Let's see, can I fit it in the 6 minutes? I've got the most experience using it as a route reflector for our network as opposed to a route server. We do have a route server running Bird for the exchange. It runs beautifully. It's got a very template kind of structure. And it's easy to work with once you get the concepts, but the concepts aren't very well documented on Bird's site. You have to really dig and do a lot of research. But it's also very fast, and it's split into two processes. One's for 4 and one's for 6. And it's got OSPF built into it, which is nice. So we are on our exchange. We've got Akamai and us and another content provider, and just us, just our little ISP. We're doing about 100, 120 nightly megs nightly to it. Just us, just our network. Mm. And that's just Akamai. So that's about, you know, a good portion of our traffic. But we're still waiting on more people to connect, and we're working on that. So
stability is good.
Yeah, we haven't had any problems. Of course, it's just us and Akamai and another content provider.
Okay, at least for now.
So yeah, for now it's been fine. We also got connected up into Lynx, up in Lynx Nova, and that's another 60-80 megs of traffic out there. But a lot of those guys up there, they like Limelight, they don't peer with you unless you have multiple diverse locations and, you know, all this requirements and stuff.
Elitist.
And yeah, it's very much the whole thing that I think the net neutrality rules need to squash, but that's a whole other topic.
Gotcha. So configuration, how easy is it to teach a new guy? Say you got a junior network guy and you want him to be able to administer the Bird server. How hard is it to have him turn up something new in there?
It's very template-ish. So you can literally copy a section, change a couple of the variables, and then just reload it, and it'll pick it up. So it's pretty easy, as long as you're not trying to turn up any new features. if someone's just got to maintain it, then it's doable.
Excellent.
So, when you say it does it support soft reconfiguration, so you don't kill every
Yes. You can. It's actually got protocols. So like OSPF is considered a protocol, and then you've got all your BGP sessions, which are considered individual protocols. So you can refresh just one particular protocol, or all of them, or you know, just every odd one. So, I wanted to script it out.
So you're talking about route refresh, right? Which is like a soft, hey, can you send me the new routes you have, or resend me your routes, or?
Well, even when you reconfigure the config file, to reload all that information is a soft config reload. Yeah. So
it's not just a refresh. It's not like a refresh or resend, Greg. It's like where you might change some aspect of how you're actually configuring. So without dropping the session right. with your peer, you can actually change how you're behaving with that peer. Right. So that's pretty that. And OpenBSD supports that as well.
It's got like functions for filtering and stuff too. So you can make your own functions. So you can say like mine prefixes are all of these, and then you can do certain things with that same that one function, my prefixes multiple times, multiple places.
That's cool. And that's the key advantage of Bird over OpenBGPD is your filtering is per peer. It's a process per peer, and it. So it's much smaller. So you can that from what I gathered, that's the only reason why I went to OpenBGPD was when I found out the difference between, let's say, the Bird approach and the OpenBGP approach. I went, I don't have 800 peers to worry about. I'm okay. I'm not going to make 300,000 root filters. I have 300 root filters at the moment. I'm okay. That was, you know what I mean? Like, but, no, actually, a quick question, because from what I read on the Bird site, it runs 2.6.x, so it runs on the 2.6 kernel. Have you tried running it, and is it stable on something like CentOS, you know, 7 or Red Hat 7, where you'd be on the 3.10 kernel, which would be significantly quicker?
It's on Debian 7 right now, 7.6, I think.
What sort of kernel is that running? Sorry, do you mind me asking?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Like, is it like a brand new shiny, like...
No, that would be Debian 8 with, that's Jesse, and that's got the systemd in it, which is a whole other topic for discussion.
All right, so let's round it up. Justin, do you have any closing thoughts, anything you're going to be working on soon? That you can talk about, because don't make me edit this out.
No, not really. I mean, I'm pretty busy right now with just our own growth and everything we're trying to accomplish in the exchange and we're really waiting for a lot of peers to come into Lynx Nova and to our exchange to, you know, really put us at the next level, which we're hoping will happen soon. So
fair enough, man. All right, Mikey, you've been quiet for a while. What's
amazing?
Yeah, what's on the horizon for you, brother? What are you working on?
Joel, I was just gonna chime in there that Debian 7. Whatever, I'm not sure what version it is on kernel 3.11.0-15.
In your face! All right, Mike. Pops. So what are you working on? What do you got?
That's positive. That's good.
Just more of the IX stuff. I've had to postpone some Wisp stuff this spring just due to the fact that my consulting customers, which hopefully they'll be working down soon, cutting my time there, and the IX are just chewing it up. Soon hopefully we'll finish all the XP manager stuff and we can start working on and new markets. We already got people talking, you know, other data centers looking to join in the same market. We'll start working on a new market.
That's awesome, man. But you know what you forgot to say is that you're getting married.
I did.
And I'm going to remind your wife. I don't know her, but I'm going to remind her and say that you forgot to mention that you are getting married. And that everybody, that who happens to watch the cast is welcome to come?
Yeah, she would gladly accept that if you all bring at least $200.
$200. Do we have to bring in ones and stuff in your underwear?
I seriously need another excuse to go to the U.S., so yeah. I mean, it's not that I care about you or anything like that. That doesn't matter. It's more
Wispapalooza, Vegas. Wispapalooza, Vegas, bachelor party for Mike. There we go.
Oh, Tom, does not need an excuse to go to Vegas. Oh, my God.
I mean, okay, we need to word it differently, though, when I'm talking to my missus. It has to be something like Wispapalooza is a very big conference, vendor neutral. Very interesting. I'm giving a keynote speech at it.
You'll be giving the keynote speech at the strip club?
I don't know. I mean,
but
the last time I went to a strip club at one of those events, I fell asleep on the couch. So it's not good.
It's your wallet.
So I think one of the ladies took offense and she goes, "You are the first person to fall asleep during my act." And I said, "Listen, lady, I had about 2 hours sleep the night before. It's nothing against you. It's just, please edit that one out." yeah, but bachelor party in Vegas sounds like a plan, or what we would call a stag in Vegas. Stag.
Please leave the deer at home.
Yeah.
That's the point of a bachelor party.
Well, congratulations, Mike. I'm really delighted for you. And, she must be a patient woman. That's what they all said to me about my missus. So.
March 19th is the day. So.
Really? I didn't know you guys had set a date yet.
We booked that up, I think, over the weekend.
Nice.
Congratulations. Well, at least it's on March 17th, you know.
March 17th. All right, Tom. So it's almost scary to ask you, but what's coming out that's interesting that you're going to be working on? What do you got coming in the future?
Basically, I've kind of continued the whole denial of service stuff. I'm reconfiguring my core. I still am reconfiguring my core, kind of change the routers out, which is kind of fun, but juggling consulting and that, and trying not to break things. But, I've also kind of started to look at FPGAs and maybe doing a bit with that where, you know, putting stuff onto FPGAs that processors don't seem to handle well. So we'll see. But, it's very early days yet. And literally, it's only kind of a thought that I've been knocking about in my head. So it's not fully there yet. But yeah, kind of looking at BSD a lot more lately. Look at a new feature, trying to change the... We're using a thing called RelayD, which is a load balancer software that's integrated with OpenBSD, which we're kind of like, it's pretty impressive, does SSL translation and stuff like that. So I'm kind of working a bit on that, trying to migrate away from some existing proxies and load balancers that I have been using and get onto that. But there's a lot of legacy stuff. There's data center move. And, it's actually not that interesting, but I think the RelayD part of it will make it interesting.
That does sound interesting.
But it's just a lot of work that has to be done, a lot of monotonous stuff to keep things going so people don't start screaming at me, which is important, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
When's Wispapalooza on?
October.
And if I was to give a talk or ask someone to give a talk, how does that work? Or do I have to be like a fellow of the Wispapalooza, or what happens there?
I think you have to be a member of WISPA. And I don't think it's that expensive. It's the Wireless ISP Association of America, so you'd be an oddball, but it's not uncommon for it for someone foreign to come over and.
Well, I'm an oddball anyway, so
absolutely.
Yeah, because you're not from America, you know. America. So, you would just sign up on there and do a talk, and it's a good target market for you. A lot of the people there use Microtech and Ubiquiti. And
do it, Tom. I can make it happen. Just let me know.
Oh yeah, Mike has a black tie, so you know.
Mm. Mike, let's sort this out. Can I just say one thing? America, second best country in the world.
Second to Texas.
Well, second to Ireland. But actually, I said that there was a guy. He had like an American flag. It was in an office in New York. And he had an American flag. He had the eagle on the top of the pole, like he was proper. So he caught. I said, "Are you a patriot?" He goes, "Yes, sir, I am." So,
coming up soon, I'm going to Comic-Con this weekend in Dallas. I don't know about you suckers.
Comic-Con.
You coming? You coming to that one? You gonna be here?
What's it about?
He could be Wolverine, maybe, if he had a beard.
Yeah,
I actually have a picture. Of the Mexican one? Wolverine. Ask Pat Harris about his colleague.
The Mexican Seth.
Wolverine. Seth. There's a guy, Seth, who works at US Sugar, and he looks like, you know, hey man, you look like the Mexican Wolverine. This guy is the Mexican Wolverine. I'm telling you.
Golly. So it has nothing to do with him being Mexican. He just happens to be Mexican and he looks like Wolverine.
No, but he is the Mexican Wolverine.
But he is. Okay.
He even did this for me. He did that for a photo, like.
That's fairly ridiculous.
Hi, Seth. Hi, Pat.
Good lord. So
edit that. Do not edit that.
I will not edit that. So, what else is going on? We've been just doing a whole lot of stuff, going like gangbusters. They have me doing a lot of tours nowadays at the data center, which is bizarre. I might have a training opportunity coming up pretty soon, which I haven't told you guys, which I haven't told anybody about, but we'll see if anything comes to fruition with that. What else?
Quick question. Have you used edge routers in your data center yet?
Edge routers? Not in the data center, but you're talking about the Ubiquiti, like the EdgeMax?
Yeah.
I've used a couple of them.
I use edge switches. Data center. Edge switches?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, but it's 38. Oh, right. Right? Because I had a guy who was telling me like that he loved the interface in Ireland. Like he was saying, it's like they combined the best features of Cisco and Juniper. And I went, well, Jesus, they're two very different configuration methods for BCB. But he says you took the best of both.
Yeah, because it's built off of
He said I should really try it. And I said...
Yeah, it's built off of Viata, and then so that's very Junos-like, from what I understand, the configuration cool. stuff. But then they're building the Ubiquiti GUI on top of that, you know, which you can expect it to be pretty robust. When I first started using it, there wasn't a whole lot there, but from what I understand, and I haven't used it for a little bit, but it's supposedly a lot more fleshed out than it used to be, and they're still adding features all the time.
So and is it like cool?
Let's knock it down, because we've already gone like a half hour over. bye from Texas, Miller.
Bye from Dublin.
Tom.
Don't do drugs.
Bye from Virginia.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.